We at On the Media are celebrating our quinceañera. Yes, it's our 15th anniversary. Back in January of 2011, when we celebrated our 10th, we considered the transformation of the show and the media landscape. No, we're not going to celebrate our 15th anniversary. We don't do fives. We'll just replay our 10th anniversary piece. In our December 3rd show, I uttered this sentence. WikiLeaks tweeted a link to a video posted on YouTube of excerpts from a speech by President John F. Kennedy in 1961 decrying government secrecy. WikiLeaks tweeted a link to a video posted on YouTube? Would you even know what that meant a few years ago? That sentence made us realize that the 10th anniversary of this incarnation of On the Media was upon us. Actually, this very week, 10 years of mind-blowingly accelerating change, which makes sense, as computer scientist and inventor Ray Kurzweil told us in 2009.
Information technology grows exponentially, basically doubling every year. What used to fit in a building now fits in your pocket, and what fits in your pocket today will fit inside a blood cell in 25 years, and it gives you some idea of what will be feasible.
So we thought we'd round out our 10th, that is to say our 10 anniversary, by looking at 10 years of media transformation through the lens of On the Media. Why not start with Craigslist? It began to expand outside its San Francisco base in 2000, eventually becoming a global repository of free classified ads and gobbling up revenue that once flowed to newspapers. Looking back at our archive, we find a range of experts blaming the decline of the daily newspaper business on Craig Newmark.
One expert in particular.
Now Craigslist, which is free, has rendered the classified business, you know, almost irrelevant.
The only details he failed to foresee were Craigslist and the collapse of the entire business.
Craigslist pretty much killed the classified ad business. So I saw the chaos and I called it. You got a problem with that? Also, across those years, we saw the growing power of blogs, which didn't play much of a role in the cultural or political life of the nation when the decade began, but oh, baby, pretty soon they were bagging some pretty big fish, such as when blogs caught Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott saying this at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday bash in 2002.
I want to say this about my state. When Strom Thurmond ran for president, we voted for him. We're proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years either.
I think what we're seeing here is the ripening of an entirely new journalistic form.
Journalist John Podoretz told us that by highlighting Lott's tribute to an erstwhile segregationist, blogs showed their ability to uncover or amplify what the mainstream media barely cover or just plain miss. Trent Lott had to leave.
As is always the case when new media start, it's the people who are willing to sacrifice their time and effort out of passion that make something viable because they want to become part of the national debate.
Each election, the power of blogs to raise hell and campaign funds increased, not to mention their ability to marshal the wisdom of the crowds to unearth truths and the foolishness of crowds to propagate lies. It was all about information tailored to particular tastes, giving rise to the dreaded echo chamber, a notion that's since become a cliché of the new media age.
But to use or abuse an avalanche of information, we need a portal. It's hard to imagine our lives without Google, launched in 1998. By 2002, the American Dialect Society chose to Google as the most useful word of the year. 2002 also saw the birth of Google News, when algorithms replaced editors as gatekeepers and served up the world's press for free. Here's Slate's Jack Schaefer back in 2002.
Well, I think that there are a lot of news functions that are better served by machines. What Google is doing is they've found a new way to bake the cake. If you want to gather and experience news from multiplicity of sources, from 4,000 sources, and have it constantly updated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Google News is your baby.
Then Google launched Google Book Search in 2004, terrifying publishers, and Google Maps in 2005, annoying entire governments by letting the people decide what places were called and which nations ought to claim them. Washington Monthly editor John Gravois.
Google is now producing the world's most important map that used to be something nation states did. And what's happening in all these geographic disputes is that Google's getting confused with a nation state, and not just anyone, a really important one, a powerful one. The whole time, Google is kind of shrugging and saying, we're showing as many claims as possible.
Doesn't that raise the question, what is it we want our maps to be now, if no longer a single authoritative view of the world?
It's almost like we shouldn't use the word map anymore. It's a completely different thing. That are just sort of repositories of a bunch of different opinions or even conversations. That's neat. But the process of adjusting to that new norm is going to be really, really hairy.
Then along came Google Translate in 2007, crossing the language barrier, and Google Street View, allowing us to virtually traverse any street anywhere.
Enough! We can't devote the whole segment to Google. Podcasting came along in 2004, allowing people to time shift radio and enabling non-professionals to become audio stars. Actually, On the Media was the first public radio show produced for national distribution to podcast in its entirety early in 2005.
Also in 2005, YouTube, creating new media tropes and new media stars. Remember Lonely Girl?
I'm having certain issues with my parents right now, which I can't talk about, so I thought I would bore you with a metaphor instead. My parents are unable to see things from my point of view, no matter how much I try and explain it to them. I learned how to see the world from a completely different point of view when I was 4. So why is it so hard for them?
Those were heady days. And let's not forget the world-changing role cell phones have played in recent years by allowing people everywhere to capture video and then post it on YouTube, drawing the world's attention to global injustice and piano-playing cats. And, of course, the second half of this decade also saw the emergence of social media as 900-pound gorillas. Facebook, launched quietly at Harvard in 2003, now engaged in world domination, and Twitter, which played a role in Iran's Green Revolution.
Just think, when we were talking about social media back in 2003, we were musing about Friendster. Jad Abumrad, now host of WNYC's Radiolab, did a piece for us where he talked to a guy named Jordan who was trying to shed people who'd Friendstered him.
I'm getting messages from, like, high school people that I haven't talked to in years.
There's a reason he hasn't talked to them in years. Because he doesn't like them.
I always accept friendships because I feel like it'd be too rude.
This may be one of the trade-offs in a world where everyone can access everyone. See, Jordan is a victim to what sociologists call the familiar stranger phenomenon, which is this. Often in our daily routine, we'll see the same people every day, like on the subway, and we won't say anything to them because they're strangers, and it would be strange to say anything. But if we see these same people in, say, Spain, we're like, hey, how's it going? And Friendster may be just enough of a new environment to bring out all the familiar strangers in Jordan's life, which is bringing him down.
That was so cute.
I'll tell you what's really cute, how excited we were almost exactly 10 years ago about DVDs. The DVD has penetrated the market twice as fast as the CD, almost three times faster than the VCR. Some 20 million players are predicted to be in American homes by the end of the year. The national fascination with DVDs has everything to do with what they manage to cram onto those little
discs. DVDs have immense storage capacity, so much so that the DVD of Terminator 2 is able to include three complete versions of the film, plus an audio commentary with 26 members of the cast and crew. Fantasia 2000 has an additional 11 hours of programming. So entranced with the technology, we were only 3 months into our jobs here when, with the help of Mike Pesca, Arun Roth, and Rex Doan, we produced a mock DVD director's commentary of George W. Bush's 2001 State of the Union address.
I know Congress had to formally invite me, and it could have been a close vote. So, Mr. Vice President, I appreciate you being here to break the tie.
We had so many more laugh lines at the top.
Right. What was it? He thanked the Supreme Court?
Right. The line was, and if the other side wins, we'll take it to the Supreme Court. And he thanks Bill Clinton for keeping the heat off of him.
And the Surgeon General or something?
No, it was a Surgeon General, because I'm going to be doing so much butt-kissing to get this thing passed. I'm going to need a lip transplant.
Funny stuff. But there's nowhere to go from there.
No, the Cheney line was the best.
Our parks are places of great natural beauty and history.
At this point, almost exactly halfway through the speech, we cut away to a montage sequence of Bush at play in the parks with walking on sunshine underneath him.
Katrina and the waves.
Exactly. George frolicking at Old Faithful, George teasing a family of bears, George twirling on a mountaintop. And we pull back, way back. It's an homage to the opening shot of Sound of Music.
Sublime. It's in the added features at the end of the disc.
DVD commentaries? What's the big deal? Didn't they always exist? Didn't Craigslist, YouTube, Facebook, and the iPhone always exist? I mean, come on. Didn't Google?
10 years is a long time. In fact, according to the Wolfram Alpha computational search engine, it's 87,600 hours.
I knew that. Happy 10th, Brooke.
Back at you, Bob.
And a happy 10th to Katya Rogers.
Who got us through it all.
That's it for this decade's show. On the Media has been produced over the last 10 years by Jamie York, Mike Volo, Nazanin Rafsanjani, Alex Goldman, PJ Vogt, Sarah Abdurrahman, Megan Ryan, Mark Phillips, Tony Field, Arun Roth, Mike Pesca, Janine Price, John and Dylan Keith, and Dean Capello. Our interns this week were Andrew Parsons and Carlin Gallietti, with more help from Elizabeth Zagroba. And as always, the show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Rob Granis.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
At this moment of reflection, can I just say one thing that you do that sometimes just really drives me a little crazy?
You can say that, because there's probably only one thing.
Yeah, there's only one thing.
You know, I feel confident enough that since there's only one little thing.
It's just the one little
probably
thing.
Probably it's the only thing.
You always say, so-and-so, as always, thanks very much.
Oh, yeah. That's like if they've been there more than twice.
Or even if they've only been there once before, and a couple of times I've had to cut it out because they haven't been here at all.
Well, yeah. As I always say to people, as always, I'm saying to people who have never been here before. That's it?
That's it.
All you
that's
got?
The only
that's
thing.
That's all you got
that's
for
it.
Me?
That's the whole thing. That's it.
It's gone.
You've been listening to an On the Media podcast extra. We didn't have those 5 years ago. Subscribe to our newsletter at onthemedia.org and leave us a review on iTunes. You know, for the celebration. And happy anniversary to you, dear listener. Where would we be without you?